So I just want to follow up on the Harden stuff. It sounded like, and I don't want to misinterpret you, that you guys are not trading James Harden.
Yes, that's okay. Correct. I've talked to James. He wants to be here. You know, he wants to be here long term as well. So I don't think anything's changed other than noise from the outside. James wants to be here. We're building with James, and we think we have the best chance to win with James.
Even if you're the kind of person who doesn't automatically assume that wherever there is smoke, there must be fire, it is really hard to look at the rumors and leaks and news and denials now swirling around James Harden and Ben Simmons and not think that something is burning. So today, with the NBA trade deadline coming up Thursday, Ryan Windhorst deconstructs this rumor mill and tells us whether all those clouds on the horizon are an inferno or just a mirage. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, February 8th. This is ESPN Daily.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Ryan, this is very strange what we're doing here. I'm sitting across from you. In person. I have not done an in-person interview on this podcast. You are my first.
Are you comfortable? Are you uncomfortable?
I'm deeply uncomfortable, but also simultaneously, like, incredibly excited.
It's great to see you.
It's so good to see you. I summon you here to this room in Los Angeles where I am for Super Bowl week ostensibly because I need to understand what's happening with James Harden.
Yeah.
And there are names associated, teams associated, Ben Simmons, the Sixers. But where do we stand right now, Ryan, with James Harden and the Nets?
So it's my 20th year covering the NBA. It's one of the most unique situations I've ever seen because of all the things at play. Because it's not just James Harden. It's also Ben Simmons. It's also a player with a contract issue, which James Harden has this summer. When you trade for James Harden or you keep James Harden, you're also saying, okay, this summer, he would like a $200 million contract. That has to be computed in. You have the entire Simmons operation has to be computed in because really, when you think about this, you've got the Nets, the 76ers, the Simmons camp, which has been relevant this whole time. You have the Irving Durant coupling, if you will, who have a large say in how operations happen with the Nets. They don't do things without their say. And you have to figure in all of these parties. And so what I believe is that eventually, probably, is that enough of a qualification? Eventually, probably, James Harden is going to be a Sixer.
Mm.
But it's about...
I'm so glad I showed up in person for this, Brian.
It's about the timing and the terms, and whether that happens between now and Thursday or that happens this summer is what we're going to wait and find out.
So, okay. So I understand that Daryl Morey and James Harden have this history together where Daryl Morey, of course, is the president of basketball operations of the Sixers, was previously the GM of the Rockets. James Harden, of course, was his superstar there in Houston. He is kind of the player he has loved the most, the player that he had the longest, the superstar, the franchise guy. But I need to understand, and I need you to explain, how did the Nets and James Harden get to this point where suddenly a sentence like that is plausible? James Harden is just going to be a Sixer at some point.
So the Nets aren't convinced they're there yet. The Nets have openly said, Steve Nash on the record in front of the cameras, we're not trading him. I think Kevin Durant believed in this pairing, in this marriage, when they traded away their entire future draft control for him last year. I don't think James Harden has meshed well with Kyrie Irving at all. And I think he's gotten more and more frustrated as the season's gone along. If you've listened to some of his interviews, he's almost like subtweeting Kyrie in some of his interviews. Even when Kyrie plays well, he'll subtweet it and he'll be like, yeah, we need that every night.
Ideal, we would love to have yesterday's team every single game, but it's kind of hard to tell because, you know, we got different lineups every game.
James didn't sign an extension in the offseason. Kevin Durant did. That was the first little red flag. Last year, James Harden injured his hamstring late in the season and had to leave a game in the first quarter.
Yes.
That broke a string of something like 550 consecutive games of him scoring double-digit points. He obviously is a great scorer, one of the all-time great scorers.
Mm-hmm.
In Sacramento last week, he had a game with 4 points. And his defensive interest was questionable, politically correct.
Theoretical, as
and,
it were.
And now he is out with what the team is calling hamstring tightness.
So what I love about being in this room with you, Brian, is that when you say what the team is calling, you're smiling wryly, which tells me that
right. Maybe
that's not exactly what's happening here.
He had an MRI, and they said the MRI confirmed there was a hamstring, essentially. So he's pretty much making it clear his intentions.
They've lost 8 in a row.
Right.
The Nets have. Like, things are not looking good for this experiment.
And his response to that, with Durant out, Kevin Durant injured, was to have a 4-point game. The challenge here is this negotiation is extremely important because these are two teams that are going to compete against each other this year and into the future. And
in the same division, the
yes.
two powers that are going to be at each other's throats, presumably, if these cores are as such.
And I would say, I guess, the one thing that would stop this would be if the Nets won the title. But that seems a hard sell at this point.
So real quick on the James Harden-Kyrie dynamic, there's the matter of basketball fit. There's also the matter of Kyrie being only available to play in road games, the whole vaccination saga. What is your sense of how James Harden has felt about all of that? How does that inform his feelings about staying in Brooklyn long term?
I mean, I can only read his actions. When James Harden blew up his life to come to Brooklyn, he did it. He hurt his reputation, certainly risked some things. He did that in an attempt to create this triumvirate that would be not only competitive for one championship, but potentially competitive for 3, 5, 6 years. And he wants the buy-in from everybody. And I think it's fair to say he hasn't seen that buy-in from Kyrie. Meanwhile, there's a team in Philadelphia where he's got connections. Those connections could end up being something where he feels more comfortable.
So, Brian, I am full of almost manic anticipation now that you've given me hope that this is a deal that might actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
What does it take for this to happen this week? What does a deal like that resemble?
You have to convince the teams that the deal makes sense, but you also have to take in mind ownership, because Josh Harris, the owner of the 76ers, has to be comfortable with trading for a guy who's going to ask for a $223 million extension. I mean, you're looking at a guy in James Harden who is not playing the same level that he played in 2-3 years ago. Now, he's an all-star. So you've got to convince Josh Harris that the best decision for trading Ben Simmons is going to be a guy who you may have to give a contract that is risky at best. And if you're going to trade for him, you're going to trade Ben Simmons for him, it's a huge moment. So, and then on the Nets side, you have to try, you know, you have to point out, you know, James Harden probably today is a slightly more valuable player than Ben Simmons. But he's also 7 years older. And so if you're the Nets, if you're going to do this trade, you want it to be for more than Ben Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Just put yourself in the position of the negotiation. If you're the Sixers, you're saying, well, if James wants to be here, he can be a free agent next summer.
He has the option to opt out of his player option with the Nets come the summer and just be unrestricted and fully free.
Right. We'll just clear salary cap space next summer and sign him. So anything that we give you today is a bonus. So you're lucky to be getting Ben Simmons. Good luck to you. The Nets will say back, yeah, but you've got $130 million on your payroll for next year. How are you going to be able to clear that? You're going to have to trade players away to do it. You're either going to pay now or pay later. Pay now, you know? And then you may have the Sixers say back, well, listen, we've got 6-7 teams that are making offers for Ben Simmons. We think we're in great shape. We're like a game or two out of first place.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just make a different Simmons trade, and you'll be stuck with James Harden and having to pay him next summer or having him walk to somewhere else. And then the Nets can come back and say, Durant's injured. When Durant comes back, we're going to be good. We'll see what happens with Kyrie and the mandate and see if that changes. We're fine. And so
everyone has a plausible reason to not do the deal as the other side is suggesting.
And then there's another thing, Pablo, that, again, I think is unique to this. Who can stand the status quo? So let's say there is no deal this week.
Mm.
I don't think Ben Simmons is coming back. They're fining him. He's not playing.
His agenda in all of this has been very clear. He's not going to play for the Philadelphia 76ers. That much we know, as certainly as we know anything in this equation.
Right. And if you're the Nets, you're saying to yourself, how do we feel about James Harden right now? How do we feel about the way he's played, about the way he sent this message?
Because publicly, by the way, they're saying all of the very almost predictably supportive things. They want James. James has not asked for a trade.
Right. Well, what Steve Nash said was, we're not trading James Harden. As in, at that exact moment, there was no trade call happening with the NBA where they are in the process of trading him. So where are the Nets, having seen the way James has behaved in this last couple of weeks? And I mean, again, like if you're the Sixers, you're thinking, wait a minute, this guy's, I don't want to use the Q word, but his last two teams, he's pretty much said, I'm going to play this way until I'm out of here. That's what happened in Houston. He basically...
You don't want to say quit, but you will point out that James Harden has strategically decided to stop working a couple times.
Yes. And that's the last two teams he's had. Do I want that guy? And do I want to pay that guy $220 million for his back end of his prime and maybe his post-prime? Pablo, this is such a complicated thing to figure out.
Well, also just the matter of like championship windows being opened, right? If you're the Sixers, Brian, like part of the pressure that I would imagine the Nets are trying to prey on is the idea that Joel Embiid is currently having an MVP year. And Joel Embiid, who does not appreciate what Ben Simmons has been doing, by all signs and reporting, also could use someone in the present tense. And if you're Daryl Morey, Brian, what I find so endlessly interesting is that you have two timelines. How much do you care about this season and this postseason maximizing that window? And how much do you care about the possibility that you can have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and James Harden this offseason?
Yeah, it would be hard for that to happen, but it's not impossible. But I also think if you're looking at it, if you're Embiid, like from a basketball standpoint, he and Harden match.
Yes, they fit in ways that James Harden has not really fit elsewhere.
Certainly not the way he's fit in Brooklyn, where he's had to sort of change the way he wants to play and has to sort of yield a little bit and go stand in the corner for Kyrie, or Kyrie's got to go stand in the corner for him. The fit between Harden and Embiid is much cleaner. Now, in Embiid, when he's having a game where he's making everything in the post, going to be happy to have Harden dribbling out there. You know, there may be moments. And I don't know where James Harden's going to be physically in 3 years.
Yep. When he's 38 years old, he might be making $50 million, incidentally.
Wow. But from a basketball standpoint, it's exciting. I would be surprised if the Nets would be willing to do the deal straight up. If a deal were to happen this week, and I just described how complicated the deal is, that I believe the Sixers would have to add to it with either a draft pick or one or more of their young players that they have, primarily Tyrese Maxey or Matisse Thybulle.
Mm.
I don't think the Nets do it without either one of those guys or a draft pick. And as of right now, I don't think the Sixers include one of their players.
No, no. Sixers fans are not eager to give away Tyrese Maxey or Matisse Thybulle. But after the break, there are other players across the NBA landscape that we're monitoring ahead of deadline day. And so I'll ask you about that.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Brian, I want to catch up here on what we already saw happen in recent days in the Western Conference, because what we saw was the Blazers sending Norm Powell and Robert Covington, these two do-everything wings, to the Clippers for Eric Bledsoe and Justice Winslow and Keon Johnson and a 2025 second rounder. And all of this raises questions about what actually is happening with the Clippers right now. Paul George is out. Kawhi Leonard apparently is, quote, probably not coming back, according to Tyronn Lue, their coach. What are the Clippers trying to do here?
The Clippers saw an opportunity to add a player long-term who they really like, and that's Norman Powell. And they took some pieces that they didn't think were core to their future, and they traded for, you know, the next 3 years of Norm Powell, basically, is what they did. And they're a team that is very deep in the luxury tax. They're paying tens of millions of dollars in luxury tax. And this decision added tens of millions to their tax bill next year. And this was really a move about money. Because in the NBA, there's billionaire owners and there's billionaire owners.
Yeah, there's Steve Ballmer and then everyone else.
And you may think that there's not that much of a difference. I was just talking to an NBA owner this week about this because he was just in awe of this trade.
Like, they don't have the luxury of going into the luxury tax like this.
Well, you know, when you make a deal that might cost you $50 or $60 million in tax over the next 2 years, as this might do, that leaves a mark. Even if you're a billionaire, $50 or $60 million leaves a mark. You know,
but not if you're the ninth richest person on earth and your personal wealth is valued at $111 billion.
Yes. You know, he wrote a cashier's check. He didn't have to finance the $2 billion purchase of the team. And that was, you know, 8 years ago or whatever. So there was really an opportunity that they saw that they took. It wasn't really a statement on Kawhi or Paul George. It's about beyond these years. And, you know, that's why Portland did the deal. Portland did the deal to get out of the Norman Powell contract. That whole trade surrounded that. So this is a thing when you have in today's NBA, you know, there's a luxury tax that basically is supposed to keep parity in the league. But
to disincentivize overspending such that teams are all roughly spending similar amounts.
But that's not happening. The haves still have, you know, the Nets are way up there, about $100 million luxury tax this year because their owner, Joe Tsai, is worth tens of billions. Whereas other teams, their owners are maybe worth $1 billion or $800 million or $1.5 billion, and they're making moves this week to get under the luxury tax. And so that's what that deal was really about. I know it's not exciting. I know that Clippers fans are like, well, does this mean Kawhi is coming back?
Right.
The answer is the Clippers don't know yet whether Kawhi is coming back. When Kawhi does come back, that they have a better chance of winning the championship with this trade, which
but
is
Brian,
why they did
all
it.
Of this raises questions about the other side of the trade, right? Because the Blazers are the other team that has been in the fantasy world that Sixers fans have been dreaming about, right? Where is Dame Lillard in this? He is hurt. But what does this all signal about what the Blazers might be doing with CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard?
Well, this trade was made to clean up the Blazers' books a little bit. And it was basically made to clear out playing time and salary room for Anfernee Simons, who is their young fourth-year guard, who since Dame Lillard has gotten hurt has had his role expand a lot, and he has put up huge numbers. So this trade was made to pay Anfernee Simons, and Anfernee Simons will be signed, I would think it's pretty clear, to a pretty gigantic contract this offseason to remain with the Blazers. The two other things facing Portland are, where does that leave CJ McCollum, who also kind of plays Simons' position? Will they find a trade for him? It's difficult to trade for a guy like CJ, who's a little older and has a lot of money on his contract, over almost $70 million the next couple of years. And also, there's a huge decision this summer for Dame Lillard. He is eligible for a nine-figure contract extension. And Dame is in his 30s now, having some injury issues. And whether he wants to commit to the Blazers is a question, and whether they want to make that offer, Dame, is a question. So what it looks like the Blazers are doing is trying to retrofit their team so that when Dame comes back, it's streamlined, and that retrofit includes Anfernee Simons. And I would say right now, the people in the league, based on the Blazers' moves, believe that they will offer that contract to Dame and that he will sign it and betroth himself to the Blazers for maybe the rest of his career, pending on, obviously, many variables we can't see.
So if Dame Lillard is taken out of the trade market here, Brian, if that's the way the wind is blowing, I follow the wind out to Sacramento, because that is the other player when you talk about teams with talent that contenders might be interested in. How do you assess what the Sacramento Kings are feeling and doing as these other teams are coming up and making bigger headlines more recently?
That's one of the biggest questions of this trade deadline. What are the Kings going to do? Because they do have a couple of players who are really talented players who don't seem to be working on a playoff level there. De'Aaron Fox, who may or may not be available depending on when you call and who you talk to. Buddy Hield, who they tried to trade last summer and has been bandied about in trade conversations ever since. And Harrison Barnes, who they paid a lot of money, but maybe worth more in a deal than he is on their roster right now.
And the other name that has been bandied about previously had been Tyrese Haliburton, their young point guard. Is he not being talked about as much anymore now?
I can't say for sure, Pablo, because as I've listened to information about the Kings, who's available and who's not has come in and out. The Kings have multiple voices in their front office. So
a nice euphemism, Brian, for utter incompetence / chaos.
Well, I don't know if it's incompetence, but they don't seem to speak with a united voice. I don't think Haliburton is available. But again, when you haven't made the playoffs for 16 years and you're not in good position to make the playoffs this year and you've already fired your coach, saying anything is impossible or unavailable is, you know, probably not prudent. So I don't anticipate him being traded.
So if I say to you, though, Brian, this rumor that has been certainly coursing through Madison Square Garden recently, Julius Randle for De'Aaron Fox, Julius Randle, who is just not enjoying his life in New York right now,
right,
being booed by the crowd, responding in kind and so forth. Does that seem like a marriage that could happen?
If De'Aaron Fox was available, I think the Knicks would make a serious offer. The team that I think wants to trade for De'Aaron the most and the team where De'Aaron might want to go if he's traded would be the New Orleans Pelicans, who have played very well without Zion Williamson. They started the season 1-12 and they're 500 since and gotten into play-in position.
Mm-hmm.
De'Aaron Fox was born in New Orleans, has family in New Orleans. And now I don't know if there's a trade to be done there, but if De'Aaron Fox moves and it's not to New Orleans, it won't be because the Pelicans didn't try very hard.
You mentioned how the Pelicans have gotten better recently. They were seemingly a team that was looking doomed with Zion getting hurt. What do you make of the Zion variable in all of the Zion Williamson, the guy who was supposed to be the next great superstar in the sport?
Very strange. He has a broken foot and then has surgery, and they don't make it public until the beginning of training camp. They made an announcement a month ago that he would have an update in a few weeks, and it's now been over a month and no update. And
he's training and rehabbing remotely away from the team.
Pablo, I don't know where he is. I don't know where,
you know where
he is.
Brian Windhorst. He's in so many different Photoshops, just wearing lots of different jerseys.
I know where he isn't. And so he's one of the most breathtaking talents I've ever seen. He's the best interior scorer in the paint, in my opinion, since Shaq, and his ability to score within the paint.
Wow. Yeah.
He's got an absolutely immense upside, but his health is one of the biggest questions hanging over the whole league. This is a guy who had the chance to be, has the chance to be a face of the league, and he's missed more games than he's played. And so, but the Pelicans are operating like that doesn't make a difference. So the Pelicans are active as well. They're trying to make something happen.
Brian, it feels like all of these teams you've talked about are living the meme of that dog drinking a cup of coffee in a room that's on fire. Just like everything's fine.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, Pablo, I spend so much time in these weeks talking to executives and agents about trades. Giannis Antetokounmpo isn't moving. Kevin Durant isn't moving. LeBron James isn't moving. At the end of the day, it's fun to talk about, but I know where Giannis is. I know where Durant is. I know where LeBron is. I mean, those are the guys that really make everything change. So let's keep that in mind as well.
Yeah, when you're a have and you have one of those guys, you tend to want to stay a have.
That's right.
So, Brian, before I let you go here, obviously lots of fulcrum points. Like, psychologically for you, are you expecting surprises? How are you approaching the rest of this week?
The Brooklyn-Philadelphia situation is one of the more fascinating potential trades in my two decades. So how that plays out, like I anticipate that, you know, if there's a deal, that you will be having Ramona Shelburne or somebody else who did a beautiful TikTok on in about 2-3 weeks, because I know that this is just so intense. So to me, it's all about that. Beyond that, you will definitely see, I don't know, 8 to 12 to 14 trades. Some of them will just be to cut money. Some of them will be significant role players. I don't think the league could absolutely 100% change in total shape this week, or we could just have a bunch of housekeeping. And that is worth the drama for the next few days.
Brian, I was going to ask you, did you mean TikTok as in like an accounting of minute by minute events, or TikTok response videos? And I feel like the answer, as always in the NBA, is you'll get both.
Ideally.
Yeah. Brian, thank you so much for doing this in person.
Thanks, Pablo. Great to see you, literally.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.